everyone, I'm Evelyn.
And I'm Lara. We are the host of Once Upon a Niger podcast, where we take you down history lane as we break down stories about people, places and events in Nigeria's past and present.
That's right, in every episode we will take you on a journey of our own discoveries as we feed our curiosity and connect with our heritage. Join us to figure out how the chronicles of the past can help write tomorrow's tale.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Once Upon a Niger. Road to 2023, we're in 2023.
Indeed.
Election is around the corner at time of recording this.
Well, it's literally like, what, 10 days away?
I think it's a week.
A week? 25th of February.
Yeah, that's just over a week from the point of recording.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Well, before we get into the conversation about what we're discussing about today, how are you, Evelyn? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm tired. I'm tired, so glad it's the end of the week.
I'm just glad that we're approaching spring and the weather is getting better. So when I leave the office, it's still daylight compared to like deep winter where by 3 p.m. it's already dark outside. So I'm really looking forward. And also the weather's gotten better. It's gotten a bit warmer, I think, in the last couple of weeks. So I'm looking forward to the summer.
Yeah, aren't we all?
And I need to get back into my planting. So like my gardening rather, should I say. Last year I was able to grow some carrots, I grew some beetroot, peppers, and that was like my year of experimenting. So this year is my year of harvesting bountiful
sounds product. Like watch night service. This is your year of harvest.
My year of harvest, yeah. So yeah, I need to kind of like start prepping and, you know, preparing the plant beds and stuff like that. So yeah, looking forward to that.
That's good. Anyway, speaking of watch night service, of year of harvest and reaping what you sow and everything. Well, the election, a lot of work has been done. People have been campaigning. Yeah. They've been putting in the work. They've been canvassing, going around town, well, not even just town, up and down the country. Even abroad, even going to different places.
Yeah.
I think some of the candidates actually came to the UK to speak. So all sorts of work has been done in preparation for next week's election. Yeah. And like every country will say, this is the most important election of our generation. But this one is also...
I feel like it's how in Britain it's always the hottest day of the year. I feel like every year in the UK there's always one day in the summer that is the hottest day for the last 20 years or something. Yeah. But yeah, no, it is indeed a very important election. And yes, so I guess we're going to use this episode to talk about to give our last minute thoughts on the election, what we've been seeing, opinions and grounds and things like that.
And you guys have been listening to our previous episodes, you've been letting us know
indeed
what you think, what you've agreed with or disagreed with, which has been interesting. So if you haven't listened to those previous episodes where we sort of give a bit of a rundown and overview of the top candidates, that is Mr. Tinubu. We've got Mr. Obi and
Atiku Abubakar.
That's it.
But I think this is also a good time to just say thank you to all our listeners. You know, we've had a really good run with the last three episodes, and you know, you guys listening and even commenting passionately on some of the... And I've had really good feedback. I've even had friends who have listened and sent me like voice notes of their thoughts and things like that. So it's really good to see that we've galvanized some conversations and maybe influenced, perhaps.
Perhaps, but you know, that's an interesting point in talking about influence and where people's true like allegiances lie. Mm-hmm. So there's an article that I had read that had been talking about potentially predicting the polls of who is going to win the election. So Steers has, they've released a report where they've shown polls of like who they think is going to win versus and trying to predict the election outcome. And on this article, they say that Peter Obi is going to be the man. He's going to be the president. And I think there are other polls that I've not actually read, but I think there are other polls as well that are suggesting that same thing. And this, what I found interesting about this poll is in the results, it shows that those who had actually declared and said, I'm going to vote, this is the candidate that I want to vote for, I've got my PVC, etc., etc. It shows it goes Obi, and I think one tiny... goes to Kwankoso, yeah. Who we haven't spoken about.
No, I did, you know, to be honest, I didn't even know who it was until like a week or 2 weeks ago. I thought, oh, so there's another viable candidate, but...
I'm not sure how viable. Viable,
but you know.
But what was interesting about that poll is they were highlighting that there were also a significant proportion of silent voters.
Yeah.
So silent voters are those who haven't declared or feel comfortable sharing who it is that they're going to vote for.
Yeah.
But we all know, I think people, even though they won't declare who they're going to vote for. I mean, obviously, there may be people who are undecided.
Yeah.
But I think those silent voters know who they're going to vote for. And I think it's interesting to see how they're being influenced. But in the article, when Steers was trying to make a prediction and say, even based on these results, you have to take into consideration this silent vote, they said that the silent voters, if they had dispersed them across all of the candidates, Obi would still...
Be the winner.
Now, I thought if you were to disperse all of those silent voters across the candidates, that it would be Tinubu. Like, in our previous episode, when we were thinking who's going to win this election, I thought
Tinubu, right?
Yeah.
We thought Tinubu.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
just checking. No, you know, it's really funny you mentioned that because on my way to this recording, I was listening to another podcast and they mentioned the Steers polling results. And I was really shocked when they said Peter Obi is leading the polls.
Mm.
And obviously one of the comments that was made is that one has to be careful about the bias of the polling because... Mm-hmm. If the people who you've asked the question about who they're going to vote for are mostly like urban people and, you know, the questions have been asked via smartphones, then it's not a true representation of the electorate generally. And so the people who are actually going to turn up on the day to vote and, you know, the market people, the people in the villages who they're going to sell them, who might sell their votes or not, it's not representative of those people. So, but I think the thing with the Steers polling
results
that was mentioned is that they did theirs via calling people as opposed to like a button vote on your smartphone. So it was actually slightly more representative than I think the Bloomberg one, which was more of the smartphone
methodology.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know. I didn't read it like in detail, just quickly looking at the results. But what I find interesting about what you've just said is really, well, first of all, it's helpful to have that context. But what I think, and I'm curious to understand, is then the portion of silent voters that Steers has go to, I'm trying to understand what that demographic is. Mm. Because if majority of voters, right, are young people, like those, like more young people have registered to vote. So I'm curious to understand like the demographic.
Yeah.
Because right now we're just seeing the results.
Yeah.
But in terms of even breaking down, I think it's been broken down according to religion and region.
Yeah. I think this is the first time, I don't know what you call it. I think there's like a kind of rule of voting, that's not really the right phrase or terminology, but something like a guiding principle where you're not meant to have like a Muslim ticket, or there has to be a slight diversity in the representation in the presidential, you know, party.
Yeah, it's the unofficial rule.
The unofficial rule. So, but then they're saying this is the first time where, well, the first time in a very long time, or probably the first time ever, where you've had like a Muslim-Muslim. So like
the Muslim-Muslim ticket.
A Muslim-Muslim ticket. And then I think with Atiku's one is also the fact that they've put a northerner, a Muslim northerner, after another Muslim northerner. Like the party. No, so like, because Buhari is a Muslim northerner, so really there shouldn't be like the successive a person shouldn't also be a Muslim northerner.
No, so it should either be a Christian southerner, yeah, as president,
yeah,
and then you may have a northern Muslim as a vice president.
But yeah, so but with Tinubu, he's, because he's southwestern,
yeah, so he's a southwestern Muslim. And then his vice presidential candidate,
yeah,
is a northern Muslim.
Yeah. And I think what people say, I don't know, because I think that's also part of the big influence, or should I say factor, contributing to this election, in that because of this whole religion and ethnicity consideration, it will be interesting to see, because with Tinubu, they said the reason why he chose a northern, because he's Muslim already and he's from the southwest, that should almost pretty much satisfy all the requirements of diversity. Okay. He's Yoruba and he's Muslim, so he kind of sits very well in that diversity box. But then it's like, northern Muslims don't take southwestern Muslims seriously.
Okay.
So they don't.
That's
think,
a dynamic that I'm not.
Yeah. So apparently, like, Yoruba Muslims. Don't shoot me, guys. It's just what I've heard.
This is what you've heard. Disclaimer.
Apparently, Yoruba Muslims are not really serious Muslims.
According to a certain faction. Not to Lara.
Not according to me. According to what I've heard. Yeah. So, If there was a sense that you need like a northern Muslim to secure the northern parts of Nigeria.
Right, okay.
So, but speaking of silent voters, or people who are not yet sure about who they're voting for, or perhaps they're sure but they just don't want to
declare it or make it known.
Mm. That kind of lends itself to another conversation that I've been seeing online about celebrities and their influence in terms of how they, what power they have in swaying people. And actually, so historically, in the last, you know, elections and things like that, it's been well known that celebrities would come out and declare their allegiance to a particular candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, whether they like it or not, it's an element of influencing, because if you've got 5 million yeah. followers and you're saying, I'm voting for, you know, Buhari, for mm-hmm. example, whether you like it or not, people are going to take on that declaration, and it's going to influence how they...
It will influence to a degree, I think.
Yeah.
I suppose at least it will influence to the degree that a particular argument or campaign points or maybe being brought to your attention.
Yeah.
But I do wonder how does that influence translate in...
Exactly.
How much does that contribute yeah. towards somebody actually voting for a particular person?
Yeah, yeah. So that's the thing. So I don't know what study, if any study has been done into actually how does the influencing translate into a vote for a particular candidate. But what I was going to say is that it's interesting this year, there's a lot more consciousness online by celebrities about vocalizing their allegiance mm-hmm. to a particular candidate. Because what has happened is, in the past, where many of them have been quite public about, oh, my vote is for Buhari. And now that Buhari hasn't done as well as people have expected, you know, people have gone back to these celebrities to hold them accountable, to say, you told us, you were voting for Buhari. You know, they've paid you. People like you are the reason why the country is where it is at the moment. So there's a level of accountability that they're being held to, which is now refraining a lot of them from publicly declaring and saying, I'm voting for this person or I'm voting for that person. So now there's a new slogan where it's like, oh, vote wisely. But don't just tell people to vote wisely. It's like there's an expectation that you would say who it is you want to vote for. But now that they're not saying and they just say vote wisely, your choice, people are like, but who are you really vying for?
But I think that's fine though. I think sometimes you place too much. I think it's important actually that the electorate, the citizen voter, is actually paying attention themselves and not waiting and on the opinion of a celebrity, but actually, like, how does this candidate's campaign potential policy impact, how will it potentially impact my life?
Yeah,
you know. And so I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I mean, some people might say it's a cop-out, but well, first of all, you don't have to tell anybody
yeah
who you're voting for. Like, yeah, you have the right to keep that private.
Yeah.
And then number two, perhaps we, you know, well,
it's but not, does it, but me. Does it have a place? Because I get that, and I think something with like election, and particularly in a country like Nigeria, it's a very sensitive one, because I'm of the opinion that if I think something is right, I want to tell everybody,
mm-hmm,
this is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if I, based on my knowledge, my experience, my exposure, or my proximity to these people, because people think celebrities have a level of proximity to politicians because, you know.
Yeah.
So if with my level of proximity to these people, I'm able to have certain knowledge that I don't think the general masses have, surely do I have a responsibility or do I have a sense of duty to try to educate or create an awareness for my candidate? So we it's not always a negative thing, because then you look at the likes of like Fowles or Macaroni, who's a comedian in Nigeria, or many other people who people are perhaps more likely to listen to them because of the activist position that they found themselves in the last 2 years, especially since the NSAS protest. They have more of like a dominant voice online and with young people, because people actually feel like these celebrities, they genuinely have an interest at heart. So those kind of people will not feel any type of way about saying, actually, this is my candidate.
I think that's different. I think declaring who your candidate is and yeah who you're voting for is different from then you saying, this is what Obi, Tinubu, etc.
yeah
have declared, this is what is true or this is what is not true, this is what they've done in the past, this is what they're doing now.
Yeah.
I think those are two distinct things. So I think you're right. If you do have a particular knowledge about a candidate, yeah, and they and you can communicate that in a way that a lot of people understand, like you can actually translate the message.
Yeah.
Yes, do that for a number of candidates or even your own candidate. But I don't think we should rely or need a celebrity to say, this is who I'm voting for. I think that's less important versus just speaking about
yeah
the realities of the different yeah campaign points.
That's how it would work ideally in a sane society where everybody kind of understands. It's true, where everybody kind of understands, like, oh, you know, your choice, my choice, and we're all entitled to our choices. But then actually I think it would be slightly disingenuous to think that if you come out and mention just one person's name and you try to look like, oh, you're just being objective or you're just being fair. Actually, no, just by saying, oh, you know, Peter Obi has more of the interest of the people at heart than another party. You're saying indirectly.
No, I'm not even saying that celebrities should do that. No, what I'm saying is, you know, as anyone, even the way we're discussing this, even though we're not in Nigeria, when yeah we were talking about the candidates, we were saying, yeah, this is what they've done in the past,
yeah,
this is what they claim to be, this is what they're hoping to do if they become president, make your choice.
Yeah,
we've not declared that Tinubu is our person. Even though we said that, actually, he'll probably become president. It's not because we want him to.
But if you were in Nigeria, if you are in Nigeria and you're actually impacted by this, we're not going to... I mean, because of the work we're doing, we're trying to be objective and all of that stuff. But if we live in Nigeria and we actually are entitled to vote, and we know that this vote for the next 4 years is going to dictate the trajectory of the country, the people's lives, I don't think I have the luxury of being like, of trying to be, not objective, but trying to like say, oh, you know, Buhari's going to, Tinubu's going to do this, Obi's going to do this, Atiku's going to do this, choose you this day who you shall elect.
You're right.
Because I'm just going to be like, no, I've selected Obi based on my research, based on this, based on that, and this is who I think. And so... Do you get what I'm trying to say? So there's less of a inclination for me to want to present all these other parties and say, oh, you know, this are... Because sometimes you don't even know what all these other people are saying anyway. You don't even know what it is they're actually saying they want to do. So you've just had to make a decision based on... Because, like, for example, a lot of the actresses or some of the actresses that are vying for Tinubu, for example, many of them have said, oh, you know, he's done really great work for our industry. So... many of them are choosing him because of the investment that he's given to the arts and the entertainment industry. I feel like that's a very one, like it's quite myopic in the sense that it's not really considering the larger population and, you know, all the things. So they can come and say, oh, you know, we should vote for this person because, oh, last year they did this for our colleague, they did that, they did this, they did X, Y, and Z. But it's just my view.
Yeah.
But then by you saying that, you're going to influence all your 5.5 million followers to somehow take an interest in your candidate.
Yeah, no, I think you make a fair point. Like I said before, I wonder how much of that is going to convert, though, because chatter online, like we said, online... people can make noise, and I just think I'm not a political scientist, so I don't know what factors need to be considered to understand how influential one celebrity's viewpoint is going to be on, you know, the vote, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you're listening to Fowles, okay, but what does that mean for the larger, the silent voters?
But I think it's, do you think celebrities have influence?
Yeah, they do have influence.
And I'm so because they have influence, whether, because we don't know the figures, do we then think that, so the question is, so I'm thinking, do you think celebrities have a place, or can there be a legitimate interest for a celebrity to say, because I know better, I see better, I know these people's circle, and I'm saying this, do you think there's a legitimate place for them to actually influence people, or do you think actually everybody just mind your business and keep your thoughts to yourself and let us all make our decisions without any influence or bias?
I think probably what I'm taking issue with is the expectation. That's what I think I'm taking issue with.
Yeah.
I suppose the points you've raised are valid and they're right, but I don't expect or demand Fowles to say who he is or is not voting for. I don't expect Tiwa Savage to declare who she is or is not voting for. But obviously, if there are, but you know what, my opinion, I suppose, is irrelevant. The Nigerians in Nigeria, if that's what they want, and they feel a close affinity to these artists or to these entertainers, and I guess that's who we're classing under celebrities for the context of this conversation. If they feel a strong affinity, and you know, their stans, and their, you know, stans will demand a lot from their idol, you know, then that's their prerogative. That's their prerogative. But I think I guess the weight that I'm attributing to a celebrity's influence
right,
is not to such a, I don't think it's as significant.
Right.
Because this isn't, it's not just something that happens in Nigeria. In all countries, you'll get celebrities. Even this Mr. Zelensky, he's going to the Oscars. He's going, he's doing world tour, trying to get support for the war between Ukraine and Russia. Russia. And like utilizing the celebrity, you know, the entertainment industry to try and further Ghana's campaign. So I think that there are other things. I think that's a, to me, in my view, I think that that's just even the surface.
Yeah.
I don't think it runs as deeply. It's part of the soft political power play.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I care about the truth. So if what I'm saying is not making sense or it's wrong, like, listeners.
And that
like,
is a fair point that you've made, because I guess the thing with like the West, like comparing, you know, the whole celebrity influence of in the political space in Nigeria or in other African country to like the West is that I guess political conversations are slightly more advanced in the West in terms of the platforms that are available for people to air their opinions and for you to be influenced. You don't actually have to rely on this one person or be like, oh, this person is the fountain of knowledge who is going to help me. There's so many conversations happening across the board. And I think that sort of happens now with like Twitter and all that stuff in Nigeria. But in this country, like there's many televised debates. There are many like, you know, conversations on shows and things like that, and that happens in Nigeria as well. But I think also politicians here are more open and willing to actually come on TV or, you know, do interviews.
Whereas in Nigeria, you
saw that interview with Tinubu and how hard it was to try and get him to actually to articulate
in any detail
his policy, you know. So but then compared to here, where people actually sometimes, although they do tend to like go back and forth as well, but at least there's always that avenue and platform. So that's why I think,
or the appearance of,
or the appearance of, exactly, yeah. But yeah, anyway, so I guess
you do actually make a valid point there in terms of the nature of engagement. I think you actually make a very good point in that. You know what, there's a stronger reliance perhaps on celebrity in a way that we take for granted. I think what I'm more interested in is like the legacy of, you know, political activists / like celebrity entertainers. So I think I saw a headline, an article of Shane Kuti, who actually is not impressed with
Obi. Oh, yeah.
We're not doing musicians beef here,
no. No, because one of the Kuti, I think it's Sean Kuti.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not impressed with Obi, but because I think one of the Peace Corps brothers is an Obi, I don't know what you want to call it, alliance or whatever. Yeah. So there's been this clash online between Sean Kuti and one, I think it's Peter or whatever. But sorry, I thought that was what you were going to say. Go on, Sean Kuti.
Yes, no, I was just saying that I think I would, if we're going to talk about celebrity influences and how they can shape the conversation anyway, at least influence the discourse.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's actually a better thing that we should be talking about. They can influence the discourse and the direction of it, but actual votes, question.
Yeah.
But in terms of, the discourse, I value, I suppose I would actually take somebody like Kuti's like opinion a bit more seriously. Perhaps that's wrong, simply because of the family legacy, the perception of the family legacy, and obviously how he has been directly impacted by that. So I think for me it's also trying to understand like what's been the history or stance of that celebrity in the past. So if there's somebody that is an artist, for example, that is saying they're behind this candidate because of what he's done for the music industry, I see that as different, and I attribute less weight to that versus somebody whose music is actually political.
And that's the thing. That's the point I was trying to make in terms of like certain voices are going to have more legitimacy in the discourse or in influencing strata as opposed to like other voices where it's like, you know, the celebrities are only doing it because they get paid or because they have some sort of personal interest, as opposed to a Shion Kuti, for example, or as opposed to a Fowles, who has actually thrown his hat in the ring and he has been in the fighting, whatever, with the people, and people see that actually this is somebody who is with us and they're not going to give us any information that is going to derail us or is going to mislead us. So I think that's, yeah, so I think that's a fair point in terms of the legitimacy of who the celebrity is, as opposed to should celebrities at all even be, because certain celebrities are going to have more, I guess they're going to be a bit more genuine in their outlook compared to some other ones.
Anyway, that's where the anyway,
yeah, that's moving on from celebrities.
Yeah. So I suppose with the conversation we've been having, what we're seeing online, what do you think is like at stake after the election?
Wow, that is a big question. What do I think is at stake? I think a lot is at stake, and I think it just depends on, so I think that question for me is like, what is at stake if Nigerians get it wrong?
Well, I would even,
or just what is at stake generally?
Well, you the point you just made of what if Nigerians get it wrong,
yeah,
I would even be like, is that even a fair question? But what does it mean for Nigerians
to get it wrong?
Yeah, to get it wrong, if Nigerians have decided that this is their candidate, then quote unquote, that's the decision. It's neither a right or a wrong decision. Listen, I know in the reality,
I guess there's a perception of who the right candidate should be because of the history that we're dealing with, in that, you know, so when we look at, that's the reason why we've looked at all the candidates, and based on like their policies or based on our perception of their integrity, of their personal integrity, it's fair to say that many people think Peter Obi would be the right choice. Let's just say
for a section of Nigerian society.
Yeah.
But then you have people will be like, no, Peter Obi is the wrong
candidate.
Yeah, Tinubu is the guy. And they'll be like, that's the right choice. So if you vote for Obi, you're making
the wrong decision.
That's wrong for Nigeria, you know? And so that's the point I'm trying to make.
It's a really tough one. I mean, it's a tough, now that I think about the question, it's quite tough because, like, yeah, what is getting it wrong? And I think, you know, our listeners should let us know in the next week or so before the election actually takes place. I think getting it wrong would be if people, so you mentioned earlier on about the silent voters or the silent sort of like nation, the silent citizens, as it were, who are a bit apathetic to the whole process at the moment, perhaps, who don't know who they're going to vote for, or they just think, oh, you know what, que sera, sera, what will be, because people are going to vote for who, you know, whoever is going to win anyway, the whole thing is rigged, so why should I even care, or why should I bother? And I think that would be getting it wrong. I think because if you deserve the leader you vote for, in a way, and if you don't vote, you deserve the leader you get.
Yeah.
And so I think more to those people, in the sense of like, you shouldn't be sitting on the fence. And so that when you, but with Buhari, for example, many people thought he was going to be the savior because of his legacy, or what they thought his legacy was previously. And so, you know, many people legitimately thought so. And so now that he hasn't done what they think he should have done, you know, would we say they got it wrong? But if at the time they were making the decision based on, it's like if you had two options and you chose the lesser of two evils based on your knowledge and based on the circumstances at the time, would we say they got it wrong?
No, but it's not the electorate that's getting it wrong. It's the candidate or the winner who's getting it wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I don't think that it's actually a fair question for the electorate. You know, that they can only vote for, as you said, they can only vote for their candidate based on the information and vote according to their own interests.
Yeah.
I think what will be interesting, though, whoever wins, what will be interesting is to see how different, you know, what the fallout of it would be. So I was reading an article and there were several things that were, this article was going through different areas in Nigerian society that would be impacted and we need to pay close attention to. So one of them being the fact that this year, Nigeria is going to run another census. They've not, I can't remember the last time they'd run a census, but, you know, the previous administrations of Buhari, Jonathan, etc., they were making policies on, as the years go by, increasingly inaccurate data in terms of population and demographics and how they would, you know, govern according to the actual society we live in. So the fact that this year there's going to be a census and we'll start getting results of the demographic change, and these the campaigns of the candidates are is based on old data, statistics. How is that going to play out in the actual enforcement of
the policies?
Of the policies, which I think was something that, you know, I hadn't considered, and I think will be really interesting. And the reason why it is so significant, as the article says, is because, you know, the different governing arms of government, so the House of Representatives, will have to be adjusted based on the new data around the from the census, you know? And so you have to represent, it's according to population, you know? So that then, that means that there's going to be a big change there, not just based on who is coming in and coming out because of the party that's won, but also the population. And so that will affect like resources and there'll be a vying for power in that way. And so I thought that was a really...
But has the right data or statistics actually ever meant anything tonight to our politicians?
I think it'll be more now though. Like there have been like, I feel as though reporting of data is increasingly becoming more reliable, I think.
Oh, yeah, but does it mean anything to them is what I'm saying, because you must have heard about the whole Naira scarcity recently. And when the CBN brought out that policy, you know, firstly, they changed the...
So, yeah, for the sake of our listeners, what is the Naira scarcity issue?
Okay, so in the last 2 months or so, I can't remember the time frame exactly, but I think in the last 2 to 3 months, Nigeria redesigned the Naira currency. So like all the Naira notes, they redesigned them. And that basically meant that there has to be a transition of the old Naira to the new Naira.
Yeah.
Now, in a sane society or in an organized society, you give people time. Well, you give them time, you take into consideration all the different...
The impacts on business. Impacts
on businesses, the different demographic, the fact that some people don't even have banks near them where they can go and deposit their old notes. So basically, the policy was that everybody should go and deposit their old Naira notes so that you can fade that out. And then,
so that we can increasingly become a cashless... So that we can
increasingly become a cashless society, but also to now bring in the new notes sort of thing. But it was just that the time frame that it was given to people, where you have a country of like over 200 million people and you gave them, I think, a month or so for this transition to happen of all your Naira notes, not just we're changing 200 Naira notes, you're changing literally all of your notes. And so what has happened now is that people have gone to the banks, they've deposited their money, they've said nobody's taking old Naira notes anymore, but guess what, there's no circulation of the new Naira notes. So people are now no longer, you just can't transact, basically. But also the reason why I mentioned that is because in the policy making, they failed to take into consideration a certain portion of the population their job does not even entail, they can't even go to banks because they have to take notes on a daily basis. People who are like laborers, people who are in the markets, people who like, they basically do like day job. They get paid on a daily basis. Right. You come today, you do this work, I pay you.
By cash.
And so that is, and so although there is this sort of like idea or like, you know,
an ideal
of we're trying to become a cashless society, But your society is not built, your people, your system, a lot of things, your infrastructure is not built for that yet. So in this whole policy making, you've managed to disenfranchise like 50% of your population. And so that's what I'm, and it's not like the CBN, the Central Bank of Nigeria, it's not that they don't have that data or that they don't have people telling them, what about these people? What about those people?
Right.
What about the villages where the bank is like 5 miles away from them? Mm-hmm. What about the people where, you know, there's no electricity, there's no, they don't have POS, nobody has the POS thing to do contactless and all. So they have people telling them that, but they've chosen
to ignore it.
To ignore it. And just to, because we want to do cashless and we want to have new notes, you know, we don't care about everybody else. But the data is there.
Mm.
And the information, the facts are there.
Yeah, fair point.
So that's what I'm thinking, that Nigeria, and even with the old data that we had, and, you know, or, you know, this percentage of people in the villages and this other their problems, what did we do with that? They did nothing with those I wouldn't say they did nothing, but in comparison to other things they could have done,
mm-hmm.
in my view, they did nothing. So, but yeah, so, but it would be interesting to see, like you said, though, what that census means. Because
I suppose why I find it interesting is due to the fact that there will be a redistribution of power because of the new data around the census to make sure that different parts of the country are getting the necessary resources, you know, on paper. That's what's supposed to happen.
On paper, yeah. In reality,
it's different. But that is still politics. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? There's still an impact on society of that, you know, jockeying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean when I said that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out for a new administration. And if Steer's poll is correct and it's Mr. Obi, you know, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I think in light of that is going to be really interesting and something that we also, you know, need to consider.
Yeah. So you don't think Nigerians can get it wrong in the extent of, in terms of who they vote for? It's more so the leaders getting it wrong, whoever is then elected, it's more so in terms of that person getting it wrong when they get into power.
Yeah. Because even democracy still has its failings. So So whoever wins the election, it is obviously that section of society who has voted that person in, but there will be large parts of the society that were like, that's not my president.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, for British voters, you will understand with Brexit, there are people that voted for Brexit, and then there are, you know, Remainers who are like, that's not my decision, I'm not happy with it. So in the same way, if Tinubu is to win, his section will be like, that was the right decision, but will be Abubakar's followers, Kwankoso's followers, the other 18, I think, or so candidates' followers.
Yeah.
We'll be like, that's not our president.
But we have to deal with him.
You have to deal with him.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's the correct framing.
Yeah. So I guess I guess that's the beauty of a democracy, in the sense that once you've voted, you can at least say you've participated in your civic responsibility?
Yeah.
In your civic responsibility. I think so, yeah, you're probably right. The failure is not for the people, because we don't have a crystal ball, right, to say this is the person who's going to get it right. So we've all just had to make it, or Nigerians are going to have to make some sort of informed decision or whatever they think.
Vote wisely,
right? However, I think for me, the failure would be in people who can vote.
Right.
And who have chosen not to vote.
I think there will be a section of society, and that will be their case.
Yeah.
But I think in this particular election cycle, to me, that seems less of an issue. It's still an important one, but it seems less of an issue just because the number of people that have registered to vote has increased.
Yeah.
Like, there has been, I think from what I read online and obviously reading stuff online, even that will skew
your view, reality.
The reality. But what you read online from what people are saying who are on the ground and their interaction with other people, it seems that people generally, I think, are more engaged than they have been.
Yeah.
In a number of previous elections.
Yeah.
So obviously, yeah, you'll have non-voters and those who are apathetic, but I think that number compared to previous years is probably lower. I think the engagement of eligible voters has increased, and obviously you see it with, you know, especially the obedience.
Yeah, but it's still not the highest it can be in terms of, I think there was a time, was it the 2015 election where there was like 70% voters turnout compared to like 40 at the last election? And so if the numbers of registered voters we're comparing now is what, so which statistics are we comparing it to? Are we comparing it to the 40% turnout in 2015? Or are we comparing it to the time when it was a 70% turnout? Or are we just saying, well, at least there's a slight increase, it's 50%. So that is... But let me just say this now to any Nigerian who is in Nigeria, who is eligible to vote. If you don't vote, this is the next 4 years of your life.
Mm.
And it's not good enough to be like, I don't know who I want to vote for, or they've rigged it, or they're going to rig it, or whatever it's going to be. Each person has a responsibility, because the next 4 years of your life is, even if you're not going to be impacted because you're thinking, I'm going to jackpot and I'm going to go to another country, that is your family, your friends, your people, just Nigerians generally, another 4 years of your education life being shambles, another 4 years of healthcare services being in the gutters, another 4 years of just, you know, policies and democracy that is not going to serve you and not going to serve the people. So we don't have the luxury of sitting on the fence and being apathetic. And I just wanted to put that out there, because I think that would be such a great failure. And there are many people, and the reason I say that is because I've seen people online who are just saying, oh, Tinubu's going to win anyway, because, or they're going to pay people to vote for them anyway, or they're going to do this, they're going to do that. That's not your business. You, that you're not going to get paid, that you're not going to allow yourself to get paid, you go out there and you vote, because the next potentially 8 years, that is a very long time. A child that was born at the time when Buhari first became president is now 8 years old. Think about that. That is 8 years of your life hanging because you've chosen not to vote. Now I drink water.
Well, but with that in mind, I will say, yes, that is a strong exhortation.
Are we in church?
It's a strong exhortation to Nigerians, but I am again from outside of Nigeria. I am encouraged though. I do feel as though people have been galvanized in a way that they haven't been. I think especially with the recent rally that Peter Obi had in Lagos, in the Tafawa Balewa Square, and so many supporters and followers came out, and he was on his convoy waving to the crowds, you know, and that was inspiring. And those are his supporters, mm-hmm. you know, but I think that you have that strong contingent even in Jagaban's backyard or whatever, you know? So yeah. Obviously we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
And when this recording comes out, there'll be less than a week to the election. But, you know, like you said, Nigeria will get the president that
it deserves.
It deserves.
Yeah.
And so I suppose that then that's the only way one can vote anyway.
Mm.
Vote for the person you think you deserve.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. But I'm also thinking, and we'll try to talk about like what is at stake, but I'm just thinking as a kind of like final thoughts for me, like what could go wrong with this election? Because everything we've said is with this sort of idea or hope that you know, there will be a free and fair election.
Mm-hmm.
People will turn up on the day. Everything will go smoothly. They will count the votes. And
I don't think it's going to go smoothly.
No?
No, it's Nigeria.
What do you think could possibly happen?
No, I feel you're going to...
says Nigeria.
No. There are going to be skirmishes. There may be some outbreak of violence at different points, different areas in the country. That's something that I'm just expecting.
Mm.
So, yeah, so I'm not looking at it with rose-tinted glasses. You know, I think there are going to be cases where people may be disencouraged to go and vote. And especially with the currency scarcity issue, some people may not even be able to afford to go and vote. Yeah. And, you know, that works in some people's favour.
And some people have actually said the whole naira scarcity thing is a tool that they're using to play politics with people close to the election. But yeah, sorry, go on.
But who would that favour, though?
Tinubu and his people.
How?
And that's the thing. I
feel as though that even works against his people, because I feel as though all that money that they've got locked up is now old.
And they won't be able to pay. But that's the thing, though. Politicians are having access to money. It's the common, ordinary people. And that's what they're saying in that. Because the politicians have access to the currency.
The new currency.
To the new currency. They are going to be able to entice the people who have been waiting for 2 weeks and can't have access to their money.
Mm.
Now there's more reason for people to be like, yeah, I'll take your 10,000 naira because guess what? I haven't eaten in 2 weeks. Guess what? Because I can't access my money that is in the bank.
Mm.
And or because I haven't been able to trade, because I haven't been able to exchange currency. Yeah. So, but I think I'm just hoping, do you know what? I'm hoping that there won't be like what happened in 2019. I don't know if you remember, where 2019, a lot of Nigerians were really galvanized. People traveled back to their, because I think there's a thing in Nigeria where like you have to go back to your state of origin or wherever you register to vote, and that's where you have to go and vote. People traveled. People cancelled holidays, weddings, any celebration on that day. But guess what? I think it was like a week or so to that election, it was postponed. So all the plans that people had made to say, we are ready, we are going to exercise our rights. So by the time the next election came, there was less turnout because, you know, so I'm hoping that the 25th is not going to come and then they're just going to say, oh, you know, now we've had to postpone it to March or something, because so that would be a massive disruption.
We're scandalous, yeah.
That would be a massive disruption. But the other thing that I'm scared of is like a MK or Abiola kind of situation arising again, where a particular candidate becomes like, think, because I would say that Peter Obi is probably a similar
figure to
MKO Abiola, you know. And if Peter Obi, because Peter Obi is really, although the polls that we've looked at are saying that he's going to win, I don't think Tinubu and Atiku are actually taking him seriously as a contender. Or they don't, I guess, I think they've underestimated the kind of impact. So imagine that he now emerges the winner.
Mm-hmm. But do you think a 1993 situation can happen again?
Let me tell you what happened recently in Osun State, my state, where I come from in Nigeria.
Okay. Tell me the story.
Adeleke, they had the gubernatorial election recently, and his name is, I forgot his first name, I just know his surname is Adeleke. That's Davido's uncle. He was elected the governor of Osun State, and he's from the PDP party. Now, there's been a lot of like back and forth for a long time with him as a gubernatorial candidate. But anyway, so this year, so last election, he wanted to go, but they said he didn't have like a university degree or something like that. So anyway, he went to university, came back, he ran for the election with an APC candidate. He won, but they did the swearing in, they did everything. A month later, they overturned the election and said, oh, now actually he's not the governor. This is somebody who has already taken his space in the house of whatever, wherever they dwell. And now you're telling him he's not the governor. So I'm thinking, if that can happen, mm-hmm. and because obviously now APC candidate is now the governor, is all in court, or I think they intended to go to court. So I'm thinking that has happened on a state level. There's nothing stopping it from happening on a national level. Because, you know, Peter Obi might be declared, and then they will say, oh no, he's not really Peter Obi because there was a fraud here. Or, you know, they didn't count this number from this state. And then they just come up with all sorts of excuses. And before you know it, Tinubu is the, I don't know, president.
This is all hypothesis. We have no clue if this is going to happen. But I think, that happening... You know what, listeners, tell us, like, what is the feeling? How is it feeling on the ground if you're hearing people talk about something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, because in my view, we've had how many decades now of democracy Nigeria had? That will be such a huge step backwards.
Yeah.
It's one thing for that to happen on, like, a state level, but on federal, national level.
I don't really know how backwards it will be, you know, because when Buhari came into power in 2015 and everyone was saying how Jonathan Goodluck did so well, I was thinking, in my mind, I was a bit surprised because I was like, why would he contend it? Like, if it's clear, but it goes to show, like, how young our democracy actually still is and how fragile it actually can be if the wrong person or if the wrong people are contending and somebody just decides to be strong-headed, should I say, and say, no, I'm going to fight this. So I don't know how far-fetched it is, to be honest. I won't be surprised if KO Abiola kind of situation happens. Again, I'm hoping not. May that not be the case, but yes. But anyway, in our rounding up, what are your final thoughts as we eagerly await the 2023 Nigerian election on the 25th of February, 2023? I don't know why I said that again, because I didn't say 2023.
It's the nervousness. The nervousness and anticipation.
I just don't want to, honestly, yeah, anyway.
I mean, final thoughts. I'm attentive, eagerly awaiting, and what can I say? Hoping and trusting that people will vote.
Yeah.
You know, and that people will vote according to their interests, but also thinking of their neighbor.
Yeah.
If you have to vote according to your interests, but, you know, also according to your neighbor.
Yeah.
That is the way Nigeria will prosper. You know, having citizens voting, you know, with integrity. And I suppose that's all one can hope for.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, fair point. And I would just say, kind of in line with what you've said, we've been divided for so long, but it's not really benefited anybody. You know, all this ethnic division, religious division. We've found so many ways to divide ourselves, but it is still one Nigeria. And, you know, the good of Nigeria for one person should be the good of Nigeria for all. And at the moment, that's not the case. So I'm just hoping that people will vote with conscience. Don't allow anybody to buy your vote. And even, I don't know, I was going to say, even if they give you money, you can take the money, but still vote for who you think is right to vote for. Because I know people will still take money. I'm not going to pretend like people are not going to take money. But just know that 5,000 naira they're going to pay you, or the 10, even if it's 100,000, think of whatever the biggest, it's still going to fail, because at the end of the day, your generation to come, your children, children's children, and just the whole of Nigeria, like Evelyn have said, are going to be affected, and you're going to be affected as well, whether you like it or not. So let's just vote with conscience. And if you're still sitting on the fence, I mean, I think it's too late to go and get your PVC now. But if you do have your PVC, and then on the day somebody wants to take you out on a date, or, you know, something comes up, don't go. Go and vote. Stay in the queue. Line up. Come rain, come sunshine, whatever the weather, vote, exercise your right, and then we can just hope that we get a leader that is going to really the welfare of Nigerians as a whole in this next election. But yeah, thank you guys. It's been quite a journey, this Nigerian election. I feel quite emotionally committed or invested in the whole process, even though I don't live in Nigeria. But I think we're all affected, no matter where in the world we are. As long as we're Nigerian, or as long as you are a Nigerian, you're affected. And so whatever we can do in the next week or so, let's keep the conversation going. Let's keep galvanizing people. You know, if you have any information, if there are people around you who are not yet sure, speak to them, encourage them, influence them if you must. But everyone should be voting who can vote. And yeah, I guess next time on this pod, we will be back after the election has taken place and we know the results. And we will come and give you guys our thoughts on the outcome. But until then, keep listening, keep sharing. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, guys. So guys, thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two.
Yep, you can find our episodes on Spotify, YouTube, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to keep up with us in between episodes, you can follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Niger.
You can also find links to some further reading and information about the episode's topic in the show notes. If you want to encourage, collaborate, or as I like to say, support the ministry, drop us an email at onceuponaniger@gmail.com. Bye for now.
Bye.